Good morning, everybody. Go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Check that old clock. It's on time, 8 minutes after 9 a.m., February 6, 2009. Today with me is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Elton, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Ellis, and Senator Thomas. We have a quorum. We're in full attendance. The rules of the day is, before we start, is no going to sleep when we start talking about some of the mechanics that are coming up. It's probably a little dry, but it is important that we understand that and have a refresher on it. Yesterday, we had the Department of Revenue give the committee an update on the state's revenue picture. And this morning, we'll have two presentations. We have a little less than an hour. So it'll be somewhat quick, when that'll help with the subject matter, I think, being a little probably on the dry side for most people. If we run out of time, we'll spill over to Monday morning, and we'll finish up. The presentations today is for information of the members and the public, and we will not be taking public testimony. And the members are certainly encouraged, if they have questions later on, to meet with the administration or ledge finance and put finer points on some of the information. First, we're going to ask the Division of Finance, the Department of Administration, which is going to give her a kind of a refresher on sweeps, because at the end of the fiscal year, we're moving money around in and out, and it's important we understand how these sweep mechanisms work, how the state's books are closed. We had a discussion yesterday on accrual and cash, with a difference on revenue of about $1.2 billion or so. So they are big numbers and big effects on occasions. And then the relationship between the general fund and the constitutional budget reserve, which is very important for those watching at home, that the constitutional budget reserve is our main account to fall back on in the event we have revenue shortfalls, which we're currently facing, and we need a three-quarter vote in the legislature to do so. And second, we're going to review the state's cash reserve accounts. We're going to see what kind of how short we may or may not be in the future, depending on our cash flow, our budget growth, and our rates of return on our investments over several business cycles. It's a very high-level kind of review. We'll come back to this in the future when we, over the next couple of weeks, when we start looking at some of these areas in more detail. So this is kind of some preliminary big picture background to help plug in some of the upcoming presentations, so everybody kind of knows where we're headed. To present today from the Department of Revenue, we got Kim Gennaro, if she can come forward, and Kevin Brooks. Gennaro is Director of the Division of Finance, Department of Administration. And we have Mr. Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration. And if they can go ahead and introduce themselves for the record, and they have a presentation that they would like to present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. My name is Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. Kim Gennaro, our Director for Finance, is going to lead you through a discussion on sweeps.
Thank you, Kevin. Good morning. For the record, my name is Kim Gennaro, and I serve as the Director of Finance in the Department of Administration. We were invited here this morning to explain the nitty-gritty of the sweep process. This is an esoteric topic truly understood by only a few individuals in the Division of Finance and in your Division of Legislative Audit. Thank you. The sweep calculation is something that we spend substantial quality time with the auditors on every year to ensure that it is correct. If you have questions as I go through the presentation, we'll be happy to answer them as we go along. To understand sweep, we first must understand the general fund from an accountant's perspective. It is not the same as general fund from a budgeter standpoint, because funds are not the same as funding sources. The fund structure of the state of Alaska is determined by generally accepted accounting principles, and it's clearly reflected in the audited financial statements of the state of Alaska. and the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. A copy of this document was delivered to your office at the beginning of session, and it's available online. For accountants, the overall general fund is Fund 11,000 in the statewide accounting system, AXHOUS. It is comprised of all the sub-funds, most of which were established by the legislature and whose names you'd recognize, as well as the lower level primary general fund, designated 11,100 in the accounting system. This primary lower level general fund is very large, and it accounts for the vast majority of the financial activity of the state of Alaska. Most funding sources that you appropriate are revenue streams into this general fund, including federal funds, program receipts, and repeat receipt supported services. So now that we have the definition of the general fund, what is the sweep? I'll be working off of this handout right here. It is the annual transfer of the available balance of the general fund into the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund to repay amounts previously borrowed or drawn. The reverse sweep is an appropriated transfer that restores the balances of the subfunds. We do the sweep as the last step in preparing the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. So it's actually done in early December, but the available balance is calculated as of June 30th of the previous fiscal year. Sweep is required under the Alaska Constitution to repay previous borrowing every year from the available balance in the general fund. Under the terms of the Constitution, anything spent from the CBR must be repaid by the general fund. Reverse sweep, on the other hand, is an appropriated transfer from the CBR, and it adds to the repayment requirement. So now we're at the nitty-gritty. The available for appropriation calculation is the key to sweep. We start with the potential universe of all the funds rolling up to that overall general fund of 11,000. And within this universe, only available balances are swept. First, we set aside encumbered amounts and amounts for continuing and specific appropriations of the subsequent year. Then, we use one of two criteria for determining which subfunds are excluded from the sweep requirement. First, if it meets the definition of available for appropriation as determined by the Supreme Court of Alaska, or if it's legally restricted to a specific purpose by an outside entity. If the subfund meets either of these criteria, the available balance is not swept. Obviously, the balance in that primary general fund, 11,100, is available for sweep. And in years of reverse sweep appropriation language, this is the only amount retained in the subsequent fiscal year for the repayment of previous CBR borrowing or draws. So that's the theory. Now I'd like to take you to the available balance in the CBR spreadsheet from our website so you can see the sweep in action. Okay. This spreadsheet starts with the available balance in the CBR at the beginning of the fiscal year. You'll notice from 2002 to 2005, borrowing occurred during the fiscal year to address the cash flow needs of the general fund. This borrowing was authorized by appropriation language and follows a process established in an interagency MOU. In FY 2002 and 2003, there was net cash flow borrowing at June 30th. But in 2004 and 2005, we were able to repay that cash flow borrowing by June 30th. The additional deficit borrowing or repayment is based on the available balance calculation in that primary general fund, 11,100, at the end of the year. You'll see that between 2002 and 2005, more borrowing was required to bring a negative available balance in the general fund up to zero at the end of the year. In 2006, the general fund available balance was appropriated to the Public Education Fund, and in 2007, it was appropriated to the Alaska Capital Income Fund. In 2008, the general fund actually had an available balance to repay previous CBR borrowing, and $582 million was transferred for this purpose. The next two rows show the subfund sweep and reverse sweep in the subsequent fiscal year, so you can track them across the page. Dropping down two rows, you'll see the new revenues less expenditures, which is the operating income for the CBR. The next row reflects the appropriated transfers from the general fund to the CBR, which repay borrowing. So you can see the ending balance for the CBR increased about $5 billion during FY 2008. This was a result of the $3 billion appropriated to the CBR, the $1 billion net sweep and reverse sweep, the $582 million additional general fund repayment under the Constitution, and operating income of $416 million. The last handout in your packet is a description of each subfund of the general fund, indicating whether or not it is swept, and if so, how much was swept for FY 2008. A few subfunds I'd like to draw your attention to. First, the CBR itself is a subfund of the general fund. It is obviously not swept to repay itself. The budget reserve fund established in statute is a sweepable subfund, as is the Alaska Capital Income Fund. Any fund which is established with language along the lines of may be appropriated for X is sweepable, because if it can be appropriated for that, it can be appropriated for anything. What statutory language meets the Supreme Court definition to exclude from sweep? Language that establishes the fund as spendable without further appropriation. Some examples here are the Public Education Fund and the Permanent Fund Dividend Fund. That concludes the presentation. We'd be happy to take any questions you may have on the topics.
Yeah, a couple to start with. It'd be nice, and if it's not done yet, is to take the last document you talked about with the general fund and explanations of all its accounts and send it to us in a Word document or something else that we could cut and paste into different areas of documents that we have internally.
Senator Stidman, that was done yesterday to Luann.
Okay. I was just looking at that. I'd rather not spend a couple days retyping it. Wouldn't get any volunteers in my office. I'd be doing it myself. Now the $8,062,000,000 balance, if we had you put that on the table for us to talk about appropriations, how fast could you put the $8 billion on our table? And does it exist?
Senator Stidman, did you just ask what's the current balance in the CBR? I didn't hear your question.
Indirectly.
Okay.
There's an ending balance as of June 30th of $8 billion. Do we have $8 billion to put on the table?
And Senator Stidman, since then, a few things have happened. The reverse sweep has occurred, which has reduced the CBR by 1,466,159, as you can see in that final column of the spreadsheet. Another $1 billion has been transferred to the CBR based on appropriation that the legislature made from the general fund. And there's been a year-to-date net loss in earnings of around $765 million.
Okay.
So the balance in the CBR today is closer to $6.8 billion.
So we need to watch market values when we are talking about what we have to appropriate.
I'm sure that's true, Senator Stidman.
Senator Hoffman.
The $765 million loss, was that through December 31st or is that to date?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, that's as of today.
What was the loss as of December 31st? Because we had heard yesterday that going forward from December 31st from the Department of Revenue that there were not going to be any losses. Were there losses during the month of January?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I do not know the answer to that question. I can find out.
I think we'll probably have some of that information coming forward. Do we have other questions on the sweep mechanics? Or I know it's a complicated issue when you first come into the legislature and you get introduced to budget language at the end of a budget bill and they've got all these monies going every which direction and you have no clue what's coming out the other side. until you spend a little bit of time with it, so. It is one of the more complicated things we have to deal with here.
It is.
Especially for the newly elected members. Any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Guarnero, as you understand the timeline for the regular timeline for the sweep and the reverse sweep, do you ever fall outside those parameters and have a sweep earlier on or a reverse sweep after some of the budgetary items have come forward just to try and help balance the budget? Is there a mechanics to do that?
Senator Olson, through the chair, no. We never make transfers that are not either appropriated or authorized under the Constitution. So if that appropriation language existed, we would do the transfer. Otherwise.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas and Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So then I didn't hear the answer to the question about what would be available. Is it right at 7 billion, a tad under 7 billion, or does it need more careful math than that?
Senator Thomas.
As of today, then, as we're
Senator
the money
Thomas
on the table, so to speak.
Yeah, we're going to, that'll be a discussion coming up with our next presenter as far as
okay.
We've got some market values.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But that is a part of the overall discussion here.
Good.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this may be coming up later, and if so, you can just we can just delay any answer to the question, but I thought maybe Ms. Guarnero could help out just a little bit. I mean, the sweep, I tend to think of it as happening at the end of the fiscal year. I mean, what could you talk a little bit about the beginning of the fiscal year when we start expending state dollars, but we haven't received all of our receipts? And whether or not that implicates the sweep at all.
Senator Elton, through the chair, the first thing that happens in every fiscal year is that reverse sweep, because it's usually effective on July 1, which reinstates the cash to the subfunds. I think the point you're making is, yes, the revenues of the state flow in more slowly at the beginning of the fiscal year than the expenditures because of large payments that are due in July and August. And if you look back to that cash flow borrowing, you'll see that a lot of our cash flow borrowing occurs at the beginning of the fiscal year. And repayment occurs towards the end.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And just for those folks talking or listening at home, when we go into this subject matter, there's not a there's not an issue of solvency or liquidity within the state. So I just don't want people to misinterpret what we're talking about here. There's no cash flow concern. What we're going to be concentrating on is what's coming at us over three or four next 5 years. Just so that we keep, everybody stays kind of focused on what we're actually dealing with at home. We have any other questions? Thank you for coming in and going through those.
And Mr. Chairman, if there's, as you go through and you need us to come back or clarify, we're certainly happy to do that.
Yeah, you may want to hang around because Ledge Finance is going to come up with a model that we're going to talk about here a little bit, and we probably will have some questions. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe it's more appropriate in the later discussion, but on the page 106, it starts out, it says, a general fund means something different to accountants and budgeters. For accountants, and it explains what it means to accountants, but it doesn't say explain what it means to budgeters. So I don't know if that's for you to respond to or if
Senator Thomas,
in short form, anyhow.
Through the chair, I think that would be presumptuous of me as an accountant to explain what general fund means to budgeters.
Okay. Okay. We'll let the budgeters take care of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are going to jump forward in our presentation to Mr. David Teal. You can come forward, please. He is the Director of Legislative Finance, which is the nonpartisan financial arm of the legislature. And we're going to walk through a little model, and we'll have a exchange here. I'll let Mr. Teal introduce himself for the record, who he represents.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And For the record, I am David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance. And this is a very simple, unsophisticated model. This thing's given a lot of feedback. The focus of this very simple model is on reserve balances. And I don't know if the other members of the committee are as aware as OMB and the Department of Revenue are aware of, of your interest in the reserve balances, but certainly I know you've shown a lot of interest in it lately. Two reasons that I know of for that: one is investment returns, and the other is what we sometimes call the burn rate, which is just we know that oil prices are down, which means revenue is down. We now have deficits instead of surpluses. And the question is, how fast, given the deficits, are we burning through our reserves? So we've done that in a number of ways in the past. Like this chart shows history. The red will show where we've used the CBR to fill budget gaps. Here we've had savings, and again, we rely on the CBR to fill a budget gap, but it doesn't show how you fill a gap. And again, this is revenue at the bottom, operating expenditures at the top, and it just shows a gap. So we tried a little simpler approach, focusing on the reserve balances instead. You can get the same information here. If the reserve balances grow, then you're doing okay. If the reserve balances decline, you may want to address what to do about it. Again, the model is very unsophisticated. There's no production decline built into the numbers. It's a simple growth rate for operating budget, and just an arbitrary rate. And oil prices are an average over the year, and as you heard from the Department of Revenue yesterday, that average oil prices over the year are not a good way to tell what your revenue is, because I think the simplest way to explain that is if you have 6 months of $20 oil and 6 months of $100 oil, the average is $60. But that $20, $100 would give you much more revenue than $60 every month. So none of that's built in, but I don't think you need the sophistication. All you really need is to watch the trends here, and you can see that on the graph. Again, what's important is the direction of the lines, not necessarily the specific amounts.
Mr. Teal?
Yeah.
If we could just stop there for a minute. What's listed here on that chart is 103, the 3% growth rate. When I had a discussion with Mr. Teal on how to put this together and kind of what base numbers to use, we just used 3% because that was what the administration, OMB director, said that they're using as far as a growth in a budget number. Now, we all understand it may be substantially higher and slightly lower. That's what derived that number. And then to default out on which fund category to draw from first, I just asked him to draw from the CBR first, the Constitutional Budget Reserve for those that are at home, and then the Statutory Budget Reserve, which again just takes a simple majority versus a three-quarter vote. We needed to come up with a process of when to hit each one. I recognize that the legislature and this committee in particular has not weighed in on that issue. So we just needed some numbers to, or some accounts to hit first. Anyway, that's just kind of a background information on that. Like the concept here is the life of our liquidity, and then we'll have a discussion later on, you know, how we're gonna draw those down.
Now, this shows only a few of the reserves: the permanent fund earnings reserves, the public education fund, the AHSC savings account, and statutory and constitutional budget reserve funds.
Senator Elton, you have a question.
And it may help me, David, a little bit. I mean, as you plotted these on the axes, I mean, explain how you plotted the permanent fund earnings reserves. I mean, do we have reserves now?
Senator Elton, through the chair, yes, this is realized earnings only in the permanent fund earnings reserve, so that, you know, you can argue that there are substantial unrealized losses in the permanent fund has experienced, and until they're realized, the cash is still in the account. Now, it's true that if you tried to pull money from the account, they may have to sell holdings, and in selling holdings, they may realize additional losses, which, you know, you can kind of chase your tail on this one, because the fact that you're drawing money out means you have less to draw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And to continue that, we're not suggesting here that you would pull from the earnings reserve account. You have avoided that in the past, and actually, I'm using the permanent fund earnings reserve account here as just kind of a way to show the negative, because the others' accounts are held to go to zero, and I've allowed the permanent fund earnings reserve balance to go below zero in certain situations, just so you can see it on the graph. But of course, it can't really go below zero. It's just for illustration. I started out here with the 3% growth rate, and then oil at $75. The reason it's at $75 is because that's approximate break-even price, meaning that reserves are fairly flat. We're not burning through reserves, is another way to say that. Now, obviously, if oil prices were higher, things look better. You're then adding to reserves, and each year you have no danger in the CBR, it's growing. And you can also see that the 3% makes a difference if you wanted, for instance, to hold a flat budget. Your reserve position changes. You're now growing that CBR instead of small decreases or balance. But, you know, these are things that certainly matter. You can say you're going to achieve a 5% reductions in the budget each year, and you look much healthier then. But I'm not sure it does a lot of good to talk about those sorts of plans unless you really think you can accomplish 5% operating budget cuts. It's something that you may be able to do, but haven't been able to do in the past. So, again, the 103 is just a number that, unless someone wants to change it, we'll just leave, and that's the operating side. Now we'll only look at, or the expenditure side, and we'll look only at the revenue side.
Yeah, if we just stop there, and again, for those that don't work with this stuff every day, in the operating account, the 3% growth, a little less than half of the operating account is formula driven, so we don't have the ability to have as much control over that as we do the stuff that's not formula driven. So the it's a challenge in the past to keep the operating account flat, and virtually impossible if you try to decline it at 5% a year or 4% a year compounded. So there's, again, this is a high-level model, and that stuff's not broken out here. But the 3% growth is somewhere in the range of where we're going to be, plus or minus a few. Go ahead, Mr. Thiel.
And it certainly may not be desirable to cut 5% or any other number you chose. So here's what would happen if oil dropped to $65, and I think that's the way that's actually the handout. So what it means, of course, is that reserves balances do fall. The CBR is used up by 2015. In fact, 2014, it's almost all gone. And then in 2015, it burns through the statutory budget reserve account and the AHFC savings account. All you've got left is the public education fund and the earnings reserve account. As oil drops, say to $55, you can see that things don't look so good. You're now out of CBR by 2012 and going to no reserves left by 2014. If oil...
Mr. Teal, can we stop there for a minute?
Sure.
On that. Maybe go back to the 50 or whatever, so we got some constant numbers. But could you explain why there's a... we're dealing with fiscal years, 06 to 015, but why that? Why there's a January 09 and an FY 09?
That was the second part of your question. The first part was to look at the burn rates, and the second part was to look at market value. And the difference there between FY 08 and January 09, and then there's another 09, which is end of year, it's probably easiest to go to the savings account sheet, which isn't a handout, but this is some of what Kim Garnero explained. The Constitutional Budget Reserve, for example, started out with a beginning balance in 2006 of $2.2 billion. She then explained that money is swept in and we have some earnings, so it grew slightly. Again, you have some dedicated revenues to the fund, some oil settlement money. And the sweep, as you can see, is reversed the next year, $157 million pulled into the CBR as the last thing on June 30th, and pulled out again as the first thing on July 1st. So in 07, again, we have earnings and a growing balance. In 08, the sweep was very large, in part because of the deposit of $1 billion to the statutory budget reserve account, which, as Ms. Garnero said, is sweepable. So a relatively large sweep that year, plus direct appropriations of $3 billion, and you finished the year with an $8 billion balance. Immediately, you reversed approximately $1.5 billion of that sweep, leaving the general fund that was swept in there, $582 million, so that on January, end of January, you're left with a $6.8 billion balance. So shouldn't be any big surprise that the numbers are the same as the Department of Administration just gave you on these. This is the market value decline from 8, not just because of reverse sweep, but because of money lost. So we're now at a 6.8, and by the end of 09, we're looking at a deficit here of $1.36 billion, and once that's drawn out, we expect to end the year with $5.4 billion. And from there on, it depends on the price of oil and the revenue that comes in and so on. So you'll see that in the model. The statutory budget reserve...
If we could stop there for a minute and maybe back up the page, then we had a discussion yesterday on how to deal with, again, we needed arbitrary numbers to deal with the growth rate of the CBR. And it's difficult to know what's coming tomorrow, much less what's coming next week or next month. So yeah. Anyway, could you go over your growth factors in that, please?
Mr. Chairman, the permanent fund estimates earnings at about 8%. That's because they have a very long time horizon. Similarly, retirement funds earn roughly 8%. We put in a number of 4% for the CBR because it doesn't have that long time horizon for its investments. And in fact, as oil prices have fallen, that investment horizon becomes ever shorter and shorter, given the threat of needing to access those reserves. So this is changeable, but the number I used was 4%. If, you know, the numbers will change slightly if you assume higher or lower interest rates, but it doesn't change the trend, it just changes the specific amounts of the balances. I think 4% is probably a reasonable number for a return on the CBR, given the potential cash needs.
I think if we could kind of just remember that point as we go forward here next week and meet with Callan and Associates, who's the advisor of the permanent fund, they're going to come in and give us an overview, and then there'll be an overview on the PERS and TERS portfolio, pension plan stuff. And then the last one we're going to go into is a CBR. And there will be a discussion on the table of matching the time horizon, whatever that, and I recognize it's an elastic time horizon. We don't know if it's going to be 4 years or 8 years, or 6 years or 3 years, but clearly it's not in perpetuity the way things look at this moment. So we'll be having a discussion on how the, from a policy perspective, the CBR is set up to facilitate our cash flow needs, which, quite frankly, I have some concerns and questions about at this time that may or may not be valid, I guess, when we get through all our presentations and we get all the information on the table. But it certainly got some folks' attention. Go ahead and continue.
Well, what you'll learn in the next round of hearings is that the CBR is split into two pieces, an aggressive portfolio and one that's not quite as aggressive. And unless you want me to talk about that, I know you're coming up later on that, so I don't think it's worth mentioning, because from my perspective, it's just the CBR. And since it's the first one that we decided to take, if oil prices are low, it won't matter. You don't. It's all one account to me in this model, even though there are two accounts.
One account having shorter, more stable asset allocation, another account having more volatile, longer-term allocation. And that's going to be part of the discussion coming up. But again, this is a high level. So rather than try to complicate it and make all these subcomponents, I just looked at what Mr. Teal brought forward and thought that that was an acceptable way of presenting it, looping it together or lumping it together for today.
The statutory budget reserve fund is relatively very simple. That's because we put money in once, have never taken any money out of it, and it doesn't keep the interest that it earns. So $1 billion deposit with no earnings. Now those earnings, or losses as the case may be, would be credited to the general fund. And this is something that as we were, our discussion, Mr. Chairman, was what kind of raises an interesting thing. I mean, no one ever really considered losses in the general fund, but I assume I'm correct when I say that because we earned no interest on the statutory budget reserve fund, we can also have no losses. Put $1 billion in, that's what you have. No change in market value.
So the side point is if there is an adjustment under that, a dollar amount under that, does it flow against the general fund? Much like if you have it earnings, it would flow into the general fund.
But that's really a question for either Department of Administration or Revenue. I'm just guessing when I say that that's the way I think it works.
Okay. And we'll
now, the AHFC capital account, again, very simple, a one-time deposit, no money removed until 2010 in the governor's request. And you asked me to remove that for purposes of this chart because that was really general funds and we wanted to address the access to reserves in the order that you said, first CBR, then SBR, then AHFC capital, and therefore just leave the savings alone and assume that the governor's expenditures of the $238 million from this account don't occur in 2010. The public education fund is a little more complicated because there's an inflow and outflow every year. Again, it doesn't earn interest, can't sustain losses. So it has grown, reached a balance of about $1.1 billion. And from there on, I've just said, it stays at $1.1 billion until conditions require that the reserves be pulled from the account. And any increase in education funding is just built into the 103% rate that goes to expenditures overall.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
On that point, aren't there provisions for increase in the in different sections of the bill that we passed, and shouldn't they be accounted for as well on the legislation that we passed 2 years ago regarding intensive needs and area cost differential, annual increases? So that shouldn't that affect the bottom line on what the fund should be calculated at?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, you're correct in saying that the legislature has already adopted changes to the education formula which will increase cost. The 2010 increase in education cost was about $50 million, and that's going to continue for another couple of years because of the increase in the base student allocation, the intensive needs, and the geographic differential. So that the 2010 budget, operating budget, shows an increase of about 2.7%, including that $50 million. So again, you can certainly design a more sophisticated model that takes into account agency by agency growth. Didn't do it, just said 3%, and that 3% includes the growth in education.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And again, we can, if the committee would like, continue to have Ledge Finance build on this model and put in some of the more additional steps and refine that, because we'll probably be, I would expect, coming back to something similar like this over the next 2 or 3 years as we keep a close eye on our cash position. Go ahead and continue.
Permanent fund earnings reserve is the one we have the least information about, because we're relying on the financial statements that are published, and those statements, although they're revised every month, aren't full revisions. So that what you see here is that, and this is just the earnings reserve account, not the permanent fund itself. So it had $1.4 billion beginning 06. You pay dividends, inflation proofing, and you have earnings. So the earnings were substantially larger than the sum of dividends and inflation proofing. So the fund gains that $1 billion. Similarly, you had about $1.8 billion in inflation proofing and dividends, but $3.4 billion in earnings. So now you're up to $4 billion. Same thing happened in 08, $2 billion in expenditures, almost $3 billion in earnings. You're now approaching $5 billion in reserves. So far, the permanent fund statement says they've lost $407 million. So you can argue that the reserve loss is much larger than that. Much of the losses, however, are unrealized, and we don't have a better number than this 407 loss that shows on their December statement. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Hoffman,
that was the question that I had asked earlier, because they had said, the previous testifier said that the losses were through the first week of February at $765 million. So that would show that there were substantial losses during the month of January. Isn't that correct, Mr. Teal?
You were talking about Senator...
Oh, I was talking about the CBR.
Yeah, and on the CBR, same thing. I'm showing $789 million in losses versus their $765.
So they had some gains.
It's a daily thing. I think we used January 31st, and there's maybe a few days more recent, and they've had some gains.
I think we're going to... the bells are sounding, so... maybe you can find a nice place to stop, Mr. Teal, and what we'll do is we'll bring you back Monday morning. Maybe someone from the administration, maybe Mr. Burnett, who's been here, he's waiting to put his two cents in and have some discussion with us, and we can do that Monday.
Mr. Chairman, actually, I think I'm about wrapped up here. I was going to enter one more number, 40, because that was approximately where we are now, and it shows that your reserves are gone by 2012.
Okay. So. Thank you. Do we have any final questions? Maybe we can't finish today. Mr. Burnett, would you like to come forward? Okay. Let's. We'll go ahead then and adjourn the meeting here and go to the floor. Please take a look at the information, that model, and if you want anything run or let me know if you'd like to see, any members, if you'd like to see the model continue to be built so we have a more finer point on it, but it will integrate with some of our hearings coming up next week. So this concludes today's meeting, Monday, 9 a.m., House Joint Resolution 11, projects for the economic stimulus package. And hope everybody will have a good weekend. And we'll see you Monday morning. Meeting adjourned.